My name's Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Andy.
What a privilege this is to get to come do this now. Program, such an amazing thing in my life. It's given me my life back. My sobriety date is March 16th of 2022. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My home group is the Living to Change group of Alcoholics Anonymous that meets at the First Moravian Church in Easton Monday through Friday at 5:30 and Sunday at the Palmer Recovery Center at noon. I've worked the steps as outlined in the big book, and it has worked wonders in my life and allowed me to maintain relationships that otherwise I would not be able to. I was born outside the Northeast, lived there for like 2 years, family moved down to the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Pretty normal, middle-class life. Dad worked at a lumberyard, mom worked at a bank. My parents rarely drank. They've since told me it's because they couldn't afford to. I don't know if I believe that, but I was never really around alcohol as a kid. So that didn't come into play until a little bit later. We moved to the Lehigh Valley when I was 12. And it was a tough age, you know, to have to make new friends right before middle school. I struggled with that, the whole, you know, not really feeling like I fit in at all. But around that age, I started to really dive into athletics heavily. And my first addiction was attention. You know, I played a lot of soccer growing up and into my 20s, and found the faster I ran, the more goals I scored, the more attention I got. And I liked that attention because it felt good. So I focused all my energy towards that. For a lot of years, just seeking attention in any way, shape, or form. You know, parents worked later hours, nobody was really home, so I had to get what made me feel good any way I knew how. Soccer panned out pretty well for me, I would say, for a while. I had some injuries, the first one being at right around age 16 that required surgery. And right around 16, probably a couple weeks before that surgery, I remember having my first drink. And whatever I was looking for, it felt like I found it when I picked up that drink, you know. I should also mention I skateboarded quite a lot, and, you know, I wanted to be like the kids who were good at skateboarding, and the kids who were skateboarding were drinking beer and smoking weed and going to shows. So, you know, I thought those kids were cool, so I wanted to do what they were doing, you know. Picked up the beer, that felt great. Had my surgery, got some medication with that. That felt great, too. And I started to chase that feeling. I mean, athletics were still a really big part of my life for a long time. And, you know, I wouldn't drink during the season, but once the season ended, I would drink as often as I could. Typically that was on the weekends because, you know, I'm a high schooler. My older sister's off to college. She's not around. She wouldn't bought me beer anyway. But I, you know, any way I could get my hands on it, I would. And just like the attention, like if a little bit of something felt good, a lot of it was going to feel great. So it's the same thing with the alcohol. You know, one shot feels great. 10 probably feels phenomenal. You know, so that's how I drank. Anytime I could get my hands on the booze, I drank as much of it as I could. I couldn't get it in me fast enough. That went with anything that made me feel good. But, you know, I look back on that now when I stopped getting invited to things. You know, I was having too much fun, but people weren't really enjoying having to deal with me. So, you know, I had a really tightly knit group of friends through high school, and they all liked to do the same things I like to do. You know, went really hard on the weekends. School was never really a priority. It was just all about getting to Friday so we could do what we did Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that was for me to just try and get out of myself. You know, that's what I got from that first drink. It felt great, and I didn't feel like me anymore. You know, I didn't feel like I didn't fit in. You get a little bit of liquid courage with it, whatever it might be, but it was the same thing. I was trying to get out of myself, and I found that in alcohol, for sure. Once I got to college, it was off to the races. Nobody's looking over my shoulder anymore. I'm left to my own devices. You know, I'm playing soccer in college, and my freshman year, I had a really successful season. I scored a boatload of goals, nationally ranked in that regard, and I drank before every game. There was one game I didn't get drunk the night before of. It was the only game I didn't score a goal that season. So in my alcoholic brain, I'm like, man, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong here. This is working for me. I'm going to keep rolling with it. So I continued to drink that way. I always had a handle of Vladimir and a couple of cans of Coke in my mini fridge. I don't think there was any food in there. I just, you know, As long as I had cold vodka, I was okay. And I continued to drink that way. You know, I started working in restaurants. After my sophomore season, I started working in restaurants. And, you know, at 18 years old, we're going out to the bar afterwards. And, you know, these people are drinking like I'd like to drink. I'm surrounded by people who are doing the same things I'm doing. I'm not doing anything wrong. And they welcome me in with open arms, you know. So from end of season in November all the way till the next August, it's the same thing. Just drinking every night, working as much as I can so I can go out to the bar with everybody at the end of the night. Surrounding myself with people that drink like I do. There's a pattern there. Restaurants were a big thing for me. I was in and out of them for about 15 years. I've opened 6, operated many, worked for an investment company that would move me around from location to location to oversee pre-opening and operations and train up local management and move on to the next one, which is a great job for an alcoholic. When you have to design the beverage program, taste all the wines, taste all the beers, you get a key to the liquor room, and it was a treat. And, you know, I saw success in that industry. I had a lot of fun doing it until I didn't. But I can see the progression in my drinking from every restaurant I work at. The more freedom I was given, the more responsibility I was given, the more I drank. You know, it started just going out every night with friends for fun, you know, getting shit-faced so we could talk about it the next day or not talk about it because I didn't remember it half the time. I was a blackout drinker. To the point where I'm hiding in the liquor room during the shift, just downing bottles of New Amsterdam. There's a restaurant on Long Island right now where I'm sure there's still a graveyard of New Amsterdam bottles on top of the ductwork in the liquor room. Because I would, one night during service, an employee came down and I was down there drunk asleep in the liquor room and told him, you know, I was really tired. We've been working a lot and, you know, I was just taking a nap. Please don't tell anybody. I'm sure he told everybody. I mean, it was no secret to anybody the way I drank. I constantly smelled like booze, even at that point. And I didn't see a problem with it. I didn't see a problem with what I was doing because my bills were paid. I was having professional success. You know, I was doing okay, moving around, doing all this cool stuff. And, I drank my way right out of that position. That would have been at 27 years old and I had to move back in with my parents. And at that point, they weren't aware of how bad my drinking was. It wasn't until I drank their liquor cabinet dry 3 days after I moved in that they thought that maybe there might have been a little bit of a problem. Like, well, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm sad. I'm not feeling great. You know, I just lost my job, whatever. Any excuse I could make to hide the fact, even from myself, that my drinking was a problem. I didn't do anything about it at that point. I just got another restaurant job because that's what I was comfortable with and continued my patterns. You know, I had to go into the next job with less freedom, so I'd have to pick up a 12-pack of IPAs on the way to work, drink 6 before work, and then sneak out randomly during the shift to get a couple more back. And again, did not see a problem with this. My first rehab trip was several years before that. That was for something else, but that's when I think I started to really look at myself like I had the potential to be an addict or alcoholic. I wasn't willing to admit that quite yet, though, because I was still convinced at that point that as long as you remove the drink or the drug, I was okay. Like, I wasn't the problem. The drink was the problem. Everything else was the problem. You guys were all the problem. All the normal stuff, right? So at 27, having come back to my parents, get a new job, still drinking my way around the clock, plan to, at that point, move out to California, you know, fresh start. You know, I'll be a new person. I can reinvent myself, you know. About a week before I was supposed to leave, I tore my Achilles tendon. And that, you know, planted me firmly at my parents' house for the next 6 months. At that point, maybe 2 weeks after the surgery, I figured out that a pint of Nikolai was $4.23. And there were 3 liquor stores close enough that I could pick up 2 pints in the morning, a pint in the afternoon, a pint in the evening, and nobody would, you know, I wouldn't have to see the same liquor store clerk. So at this point, I'm calculating my drinking, still not necessarily ready to admit that it's a problem. Get back on my feet and, you know, I go back to what I know. I go back to restaurants, bartending. A lot of freedom back there. I worked at a couple places in Easton up in the Lehigh Valley, and it was the same thing. Pouring myself drinks nonstop. you know, trying to drink the bar dry by myself while I'm closing it down. You know, you give me freedom, and I, at that point, was going to take whatever I could get. You know, not just with booze, with anything. You gave me an inch, I wanted a mile. You know, I felt like I was owed that for some reason. But towards the end of my restaurant work in Easton, I decided I was going to put down the drink. You know, I think it had to do with an ex finding a backpack full of like four empty fifths of Nikolai and confronting me about it. And I said, well, you know, they just back up after a little while, right? There's nothing wrong with that. And a couple weeks after that, I said, you know what? I'm just going to quit. So I tried to quit cold turkey after drinking vodka around the clock for who knows how long at that point. 48 hours into that, I ended up with DTs. I was at my parents' house, and vivid auditory and visual hallucinations. There were people in my room. There were people in the hallway. There was a Misfits cover band playing at my neighbor's house. I could hear it. I could hear it all. I mean, it was extremely real to me. I remember being frightened, absolutely frightened, because I thought this was all real. Yeah, I should say, never try to quit alcohol on your own. Medical attention is required at that point. It will kill you. So I go downstairs, and, you know, I'm talking to my parents. I'm like, you got to call the cops. You got to get the band next door to stop. It's too late. I'm trying to sleep. I feel like shit. My dad calls 911, and I'm like, tell him to have the cops come out. Tell him to stop the band. He says, Andy, there's no music. And that's when it all kind of settled in, what was happening. And I said, you got to take me to the hospital. So that's the first time I ended up in the hospital from drinking. Was there for about 6 days, got out. I said, all right, you know, I'll be fine now. I'm dry, whatever. No problem. And I learned earlier in my journey into recovery that, you know, meetings were a good place to go if you had a problem. I'd never been to an AA meeting before. My first meeting was 8 o'clock Tuesday at Tatami. And, you know, I knew that when I got there, I should say what was going on, fresh out of the hospital, this is how I drank, and I shared all that. Got open and honest about how I drank, not really how I felt, but how I drank. And talk about crosstalk. As soon as I'm done, right behind me, Jimmy C stands up, or speaks up and says, now that is an alcoholic. And that is my first memory of an AA meeting. It was Jimmy C calling me out on my shit before I was ready to hear it. And I dabbled in AA a little bit at that point. You know, I'd go to a meeting a week, a meeting every 2 weeks, and I wasn't really ready to listen to a room full of drunks at that point. You know, maybe I wanted a little bit of what you had, a little bit of what you had, you know, but that was it. I was still convinced at that point, as long as you took the drink away, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm not the issue. I continued to think that way for years. Let's see, 2018, 2019... bounced in and out of the rooms. In 2019, I went to a wedding down at the U.S. Constitution Center for a good buddy of mine. And at this point, I was back to drinking around the clock. It really didn't take long. I mean, once I picked up again, it was back off to the races, because I pick up right where I left off. And every bottom gets deeper. Down at a wedding at the U.S. Constitution Center, I'm drinking all morning before the ceremony. I got a pint in my breast pocket. I'm drinking that in the bathroom during the ceremony. It was an open bar, so, you know, we get to the reception, and I'm just, they had whiskey, so great, I'll drink whiskey tonight. So I'm pounding back whiskey, and for whatever reason, whatever my BAC was, I could still talk to you just like I am now. It wasn't a problem. So I left there thinking I was just fine, didn't tell anybody I was leaving, made a wrong turn on 5th, ended up on, I can't remember if it was the Ben Franklin or the Walt Whitman, and trying to look at my phone to get directions, and all of a sudden I see lights behind me. And luckily I pulled over in Jersey, where it's a traffic offense and not a legal offense, but I spent that night in jail. They were nice enough to release me in the care of the hotel clerk that the hotel my friends were staying at, but he wouldn't let me in the hotel. So it's 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm in a suit that's now ripped, and the only place I could think to go is 30th Street Station. So I slept on a bench in 30th Street Station that morning. Until everybody woke up and I could get a hold of somebody, because I had to go get my car out of impound at that point. And my good buddy Mohan now lives out in California, met up with me, picked me up, took me back to get my car. And I remember the conversation with Mohan and my other buddy Alex, you know, because I was supposed to leave for California 2 days later. And they're like, dude, you should not go to California. So whatever you have here is going to come with you when you go out there. And I said, no, you know what? No, it's all right, dude. It's, you know, it's the West Coast, sunny San Diego, living right on the beach. It's like, that's all I need to make a change. That's all I need to do something different in my life. So I went and I would drive. I drove out there with my dog and my car packed full of all my stuff and, you know, all this hope for a new beginning. And first day I drove 12 hours and got to a hotel and drank for 12 hours. The next day I drove for 8 hours and got to a hotel and drank for 16 hours. And, you know, I eventually did make it to San Diego, but not without, you know, a graveyard of Nikolai behind me. And I did okay on self-will for a couple weeks in San Diego. Okay, and by okay, I mean I would wait till 8 o'clock to start drinking vodka. I did okay for a little while. And one of my oldest friends actually put me up in his place for a long time. Said, you know, just get on your feet. You know, you can stay here as long as you need to. It's not a problem. And I got a little discouraged. I couldn't find work, probably because I smell like alcohol all the time. And then I just started to drink more. And the liquor store down the street had Pinnacle for $6.99 a fifth. And at some point, he started to notice all the empty vodka bottles. And I know he could smell it on me. He said, dude, you got to do something about this drinking or you got to go. I said, all right. Again, tried to quit on my own. 2 days later, working for his company, I had a seizure on top of a third-story roof. Still have to make that amends, so I don't know exactly what happened on the roof. I know that I went down, and the next thing I knew, there were firefighters above me. Couldn't tell them where I was. I thought I was 45 years old. I was 33 at the time. No recollection of what happened. I don't know how long I was out. All I know is I was out for as much time as it took for them to call 911, get the firefighters out, get the ladder lifted up to the roof, and get me on a stretcher. I don't know how long that was, but I was out for a while. And through some work, I gained the perspective of seeing what it is that one of my oldest friends had to see while that was happening. You know, was I defibrillated? I don't know. I still have to make that amends. And that still wasn't enough for me to put down the drink. You know, we talking about consequences before the meeting. I'll just brush on this real quick. I had consequences when I was growing up. The consequences were there, and for a long time I would have told you they weren't, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter what the consequence was. It was never going to be enough for me to put down the drink. It was never going to be enough for me to put down the drink. So, off the roof, straight to the hospital. I'm at the hospital for, I think, 7 days, all hooked up all over the place, tried to disconnect myself. They didn't like that. And they hooked me right back up, and I stayed put in bed. And, you know, I got out, and I went where I knew I could go, and that was AA. So I go back into the rooms in a city where I know 4 people. You know, I'm out in sunny San Diego. If there's anywhere to get sober, that should be the place, right? It's beautiful there. But I remember celebrating my 30-day coin with a pint of vodka. It seemed like a great idea at the time. I got this cool little red chip, man. Cool, let me go get a pint. I did well. I'm probably better now. That was all I needed. And then right back to where I left off. You know, I finished that pint. I went and got another one, and then they sold vodka at CVS out there, too. So then I went to CVS the next morning, and was right off to the races. You know, I was incapable of putting down the drink on my own. And I was incapable of doing it with help at that point because I wasn't willing to accept help or ask for help. You know, I was still at that point driven by selfishness and fear. So a week goes by and my buddy finally comes up to me and says, dude, you have to go. He's like, this has gone on too long. You know, I remember not being angry about that. I just remember saying, okay, because I understood. Like, I knew that I hadn't held up my end of the bargain. I hadn't contributed financially. I had hardly been a friend out there. I wasn't living. I was existing. I was barely even existing. I was just on this couch, and then I'd walk to the liquor store, come back to the couch, walk the dogs, come back to the couch, and whenever I was on the couch, I was drinking. Now, I wisened up a little bit at this point where, you know, I'm still trying to crack the code, you know, switch from straight vodka. It's a little too dehydrating. I'll do half a pint of vodka with half a pint of water, and I'll chug that, and that'll be good. Still too dehydrating. Let me try a box of wine instead. That'll be great. Sugar content's too high, so I go back to the vodka with that low-calorie cranberry juice. And that was a cycle I continued after I made it back to, yet again, my parents' house. I was determined at that point to crack the code. I missed a rehab trip. Came back from California, and one of the contingencies was as soon as I came back, I had to go into treatment. And I went into treatment, and I gave it a fair shake. But, you know, 28 days to dry out, I still didn't have a solution when I left. I came back out. I tried meetings for a little while. This was right when COVID hit. I said, I'm not doing Zoom. That's not for me. I need a fellowship. I can't do Zoom. And that whole next year, I tried to count. You know, I tried to count all the rehabs, detoxes, Librium tapers. I got to 4 rehabs, 7 detoxes, and I lost count at 12 Librium tapers. I don't know how my primary care provider was willing to write me a new prescription for Librium every month, but she did. And at this point, I'm grateful that she did. She's still my doctor. You know, she was instrumental in my recovery. Step 11, it says, be quick to see where doctors and religious people are right. But yeah, that whole year, I was going to crack the code. I was going to figure out what the right thing to drink was at the right time. I mean, the book talks about all of it. I was going to figure that all out on my own. And I drank that way until would have been January of 2021, where I just decided I had enough, you know. That was it for me. Back to treatment. And I really did give it my all there. The first thing I did when I got to treatment there was I got my hands on a big book and I just read. I just read the big book. I didn't know what I was reading because, you know, I'm 3, 4, 5 days sober at this point and I'm pumping me full of barbiturates and whatever else they're giving you to help you come down. And I didn't comprehend what I was reading at all. But, you know, I read it and I was at least at that point a little bit willing. And I got out. And I went right back to that Tatami group on Tuesday night, and I heard a gentleman speak, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said yes. He said, call me tomorrow, and I did. You know, and I called him every day until I stopped or he stopped picking up. I don't remember. But I was. At that point, for the first time in my life, I was willing, but I was not yet ready to be honest. So the willingness, you know, I rode that for a while. I did my, you know, my 90 and 90. I took service commitments. I fellowshiped. I did everything except for, you know, there's a triangle in the back of our coins, unity, service, and recovery. I did everything but the base of the triangle, which is recovery. That's the step work. I wasn't willing to do that yet. So I rode the fellowship and service train for a while, and it was great. You know, that's in that period of time, I found my home group. My life started to get better. Some of the promises started to come true for me even at that point. But, you know, my pattern in the past was 1, 2, 3, one, two, three, and just turn the jet engines on. I started my first 4-step in 2014. I finished my 4th and 5th step about a year ago, probably almost to the day, you know. And in between those two, I had the intention of starting other ones, but I never put pen to paper. I was never ready to do the work. I mean, I was at a meeting earlier tonight, and I talked about it. I still remember the fear so vividly of coming into the rooms of, you want me to be rigorously honest. I'm not ready to tell anybody any of this stuff. Nobody thinks like I do. No one's had these thoughts. No one's done the things that I've done. I wasn't ready to relate yet. But in a Vision for You, it says, Henry Ford once remarked, experience is the thing of supreme value in life. Later on, it goes to say, you know, as long as we're willing to face it, our dark past become our greatest assets. But I was not ready for any of that. I was still terminally unique. You weren't like me. You didn't understand me. You would drink like me if you had my life too. All the same shit we hear. And the honesty was the hardest thing for me. And I could be honest with people throughout the day, whatever, that wasn't a problem. But when it came down to writing, you know, writing out a 4-step and facing everything that I had done, I already knew everything that was going to be on the 4-step because it's stuff that kept me up at night. You know, I was well aware of what all of it was, and I could see that at the root of it, I was the cause of everything on that list was the result of something shitty I had done to someone else first. I could see that ahead of time. That wasn't a problem. But that fear was still there. And, you know, there comes a time where the only thing between us and a drink is our higher power, and I didn't have one yet at that point. You know, I thought I did. I got on my knees. We said the 3rd step prayer, whatever. But I was making no effort to get connected, not to alcoholics or to my higher power. And there came a time where a drink sounded great. So October 2021, I picked back up. And I think I had two beers the first night, and I said, shit, I must be the exception. I had two beers. This is great, you know. And then 3 days later, I'm surrounded by empty pints of Nikolai, and it's the same thing all over again. So I go to detox, and in detox, they're saying, you know, there's a speaker coming to speak to the rehab. If any of you guys want to go, you're welcome to go. And I remember somebody who had been instrumental in my recovery to that point, even though I wasn't fully willing to accept their help, spoke at rehabs pretty frequently. So I said, what's his name? He said, James A. So I went, because I know James A. I asked James A. that night to be my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor ever since. But when I got out, I came back into the rooms with anger. Anger mostly at myself for having given up the whole 8 months that I had, all the work I had done. I didn't do shit. I didn't do any work at that point. And I remember getting that 30-day chip, and I was pissed. I was so angry to be getting that 30-day chip. And if you're going to carry around anger like that and not address it, there's only one option as an alcoholic, and that was to pick back up. And that's exactly what I did. Probably for about another month, I drank. Very calculated, right? I get home from work. I'd be at work in 13 hours. That means I can drink 12 ounces of alcohol, and I probably won't smell in the morning. Because I was working construction with other alcoholics. My boss was a custom cabinet maker out in Jersey who just celebrated 33 years last week, and the other was my sponsor. So I went on trying to do that, and then it gets to the point where I have to stop at the liquor store right by the shop on the way home so I can have a drink on the way home so I can drink more before I have to be at work the next day. All that calculated drinking, and this whole time, even with a belly full of booze and head full of AA, not seeing the insanity in my actions. I was blind to it. And then it was a random Monday. It's still really vivid. It was a random Monday. A good buddy of mine who I met in the program calls me to ask me how I'm doing. I said, I'm all right. He says, really? Because you sound like shit. So he came over, drugged me to a meeting, drunk, and said, all right. I said, I'm going to get back into the rooms. But the rate I had been drinking, I knew that I couldn't detox myself. I'm not going through DTs again. I'm not doing that again. And so I picked up the next morning, and that's when it really hit me, like, man, I have to get somewhere to get medical attention. And that was the deepest I've ever been emotionally. I remember calling the suicide hotline after just crying and crying on my couch for I don't know how many hours. And then halfway through the conversation, it just clicks. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm wasting your time. This isn't who I need to be calling. You know, I knew at that point I needed to get back to AA, and the first step to getting back to AA was to get my system clean and get the alcohol out of my system. So I did a 3-day detox at a hospital over in Allentown. And as soon as I got out, I installed a bunch of shoe molding in my parents' house. But when I was done with that, I called my sponsor, and we sat down and we did 1, 2, and 3. And I think a day or two after that, pen hit paper for step 4. And for the first time, I was ready to be honest. I was ready to give it all away. Like, I can't carry this anymore. I know it's all my fault, but it's still a burden. I was ready to get it all down, to write it all down. I was having a conversation with a guy at a meeting last night, and I'm looking back on all my relapses. I have no idea how many there were. But every relapse was a step 1 problem, you know? I was selfish, I was powerless, and I was never fully willing to admit that I couldn't control anything. And how freeing that is, right? I can't control shit. That's great. I can stop trying. Once I realize that I'm powerless and I can't control anything, I no longer have to make an effort to. I'm no longer wasting energy foolishly, as the book says. And at that point, I was ready to develop a connection with a higher power. My first sponsor wasn't the right sponsor to take me through the steps, but he was able to show me that you could have fun in sobriety, which was something I was not convinced of at that point. And he also gave me some of the best advice I ever got in regards to, you know, developing a higher power of your understanding. It's like, dude, you don't have to know. Just seek. Like, as long as you're looking, you're moving forward, you're moving in the right direction. And that stayed with me for the last 2 years. You know, in rehab, they give you the whole, gotta pick a higher power, you know, they say it can be a doorknob. I remember this one time for one guy, it was the Yankees, for another dude, it was like his baby mom. And I used to get so angry at that. That doesn't make sense. How can you make that your higher power? I didn't realize at that point it was just an exercise in believing in something bigger than yourself. Because I ran the show to that point in my life. When Andy runs the show, it is a shit show. So when Penn, you know, I've heard that when you start working on one step, the previous step becomes a little bit clearer to you. And it did. You know, my sponsor said something to me once that, you know, the longest relationship you're ever going to have in life is the one you have with your higher power. They're there from the beginning and they're there till the end. Like any relationship in life, it's, I have to be willing to maintain it. You know, I heard another share at a meeting a couple weeks ago that you call them God winks, God moments, whatever you might call them. I'm awake to those now. They very well could have been there the whole time. Right? But when I was drinking, I was not awake to anything. I closed myself off to people, to the world, to everything. Cause it was just me and the booze. That was all I needed. Once I was able to wake up to that, my life started to change, like really change for the better. And I'll say it to anybody who will listen, if you haven't done 4 and 5, do 4 and 5. Everybody talks about the big bad 4-step. It's not. It was so freeing for me. At the end of step 5, it tells you the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come quick, or will often come quickly. You know, you'll feel you're walking down the broad highway hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. That was my experience. That was my experience when I completed 4 and 5. And I was talking to Steven on the way up here. I have not had the urge or a craving to drink since I completed 4 and 5 with my sponsor. That was one of the most remarkable experiences I've ever had in my entire life. So I'll shout it from the rooftops to anybody that'll listen. You know, it's not the big bad 4-step, it's freeing. Speaking of freeing, step 3 is the same way. You know, when I look back and I'm fully able to give it up every day, I don't have to be in charge, I don't have to run the show. I can wash my hands of the situation and be awake to, you know, my higher power giving me direction in life. You know, I can ask for the right way to go. I'll touch on 11 a little bit, right? We seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood, and praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I ask my higher power every morning for sobriety, strength, guidance, tolerance, and love, that my thinking be divorced of selfishness, self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives so that I can be of maximum service to others. I can maintain that relationship with my higher power now because that's the most important thing in my life. Without that, I don't have recovery. I'm not able to help others. I don't have all the things I have in my life. I remember the first time I really felt that. I have these moments of just overwhelming gratitude every now and again. I'm driving down the highway and I'll just burst into tears out of nowhere. You know, and that's when I feel a closeness to my Creator that I can't explain. And I don't put a name on it. I find as soon as I'm starting to put a name on my higher power, it's me taking my will back. I don't care if it's God, Allah, Vishnu, Vinshivitas, the universe. I don't care what you call it. It's something bigger than yourself, and that's all I need to know, is that there's something out there bigger than me, and I'm not in charge. Oh, the freedom that comes with that. Yeah, you know, I get to live now. Not just exist. Like I mentioned, I was doing on the couch in California, you know. And in working the steps, somewhere along the way, you know, we experienced that psychic change. I don't know where along the way that started to happen. I don't know when the promises started to come true. I just remember looking down to read the promises at the end of the meeting and checked them all off, you know. Because I'm often asleep to the things that are happening around me. But if I'm connected to my higher power, there's a better chance I'm going to be awake for them. You know, and implementing a 10-step early on in my recovery helped me to see my patterns. A lot of the patterns that I maintained my entire life that I discovered through 4 and 5. You know, where am I selfish, angry, dishonest, afraid? If it's the same situations every night, that might be a pattern. I had unfortunately ended a relationship recently, an engagement recently, and the old me would have been an absolute human piece of shit to her until she came to that decision on her own. But, you know, call it a gift of the program, I was able to sit down with her and clearly tell her exactly why it was that everything needed to end. Instead of putting her through a mountain of shit, which I'm sure it's still not easy for her, but I'm able to communicate now. That's a gift of the program. And often those moments that bring me to tears out of gratitude, you know, it'll be for the direction my life is going or the things I was able to get back, you know, a more selfish gratitude sometimes. But I was able to share my story at a men's meeting about a month ago, and I had one of those moments on the way there, but it wasn't for the direction my life's going, the things I have, all the stuff I just listed. It was for the people who've been a part of my life through this journey, you know, from just stepping through the doors into the rooms or from the very start, you know, just the people who've helped guide me in this right, guide me in this direction, whether I wanted it or not. Other alcoholics, my sponsor, my friends, my family, everybody who's been along for the ride, pushing me in the right direction or encouraging me to go in the right direction. And, you know, I'm thinking about my sponsor and, you know, I owe this guy this immense debt of gratitude. You know, he so freely gave to me what was given to him, and it's the promises just come true. And how do I pay this man back? You know, and it occurred to me the only way to pay him back and to pay the other people back is to continue to carry the message, is to take another alcoholic through the 12 steps and to give to them what was given to me, because that's how our program survived. Man, that was a cool feeling, just to notice that. And about a week before that, a friend of mine had reached out to me, a guy I play baseball with, said, Andy, you know, I can't stop drinking, I don't know what it is, every time I pick up, I just go and go and go. And he asked me what I did. You know, what'd you do to stop drinking? Well, I met a group of people and adopted a spiritual program that allowed me to entirely change the way I approach life and people in general. And he looked at me like I had two heads, because, like, what the fuck is that? That's a little much. But no, I explained to him, you know, I go to meetings, you know, I read this book, I take suggestions, and, you know, I still remember the pain in his eyes. And this is a hardened macho guy, right? He doesn't want to show emotion. I can see the tears welling up in his eyes, and I remember that. I remember that so vividly. Like, I don't know what to do. I want to stop. I don't know what to do. Will you please help me? And I just told him how proud I was of him for reaching out. I took him to a meeting that night, and then the next night, and the next night, and, you know, he's busy with his family, I'm busy with work, and 30 days later, I get a picture of his 30-day chip pop up on my phone. And that brought me to tears. Like, that really is the gift of the program, ultimately, right? Like, once we start to figure this out a little bit, we get to give this away to other people. Page 20, first paragraph, my very life as an ex-problem drinker relies upon my constant thought of others, and I may help meet their needs. That's it. It's so simply put right there. How do I get out of myself? Well, I think about other people. I help other people. I had to get out of myself to fix myself. The more I'm thinking about other people, the more I'm helping other people, the less I'm thinking about me and my shit. Because my shit is irrelevant. I don't have problems anymore. I have situations that need navigated every now and again. But when I was drinking, I could make anything a mountain. Anything at all a mountain. But that's not the case in my life anymore. This program has given me so much. Yeah, there's no problems anymore. And at the end of the day, if I put my head on the pillow, go through my 10-step inventory, I don't do that every night, I'm not perfect. Go through my 10-step inventory, and I don't have any check marks on that list, that's a great day. You know, when I was drinking, I wanted to be up here all the time. And then the higher I am here, the lower I get down here. I didn't realize that, you know, life's a little bit mundane. It kind of exists right here. But I wasn't comfortable right. I didn't know how to navigate right here. Not without a drink. You know, I didn't have an answer for anything. Now most days are right here, and I don't have bad days. You know, I know people who get yelled at for that, but it's a reality. Like, I remember the places I've slept. I remember vividly the emotions I've felt. And I don't have to feel that anymore. I don't have to live like that anymore. The program has given me so much. You know, the amends process is amazing, and making an amends to my mom, you know, check the mom and dad off the list first, right? Make my amends to my mom. She says, Andy, the best amends you can make to me is just continue to live your life sober. And it's true. You know, I'm able to be there for people now. I can be a friend. I can be a brother. I can be a son. I can be a good worker. I can, you know, I do get to do these things now because I was incapable of doing them before. I like paying, I do have to pay bills. Great. I can do that now. I couldn't do that before. I'd have to go pawn my laptop for a day to pay a phone bill and then buy it back on Friday. You know, I think back at all the time I wasted, just wasted. But like the book says, our dark past become our greatest asset. And I can use that to relate to people now. Another one that's great, it's the second time tonight I'm mentioning it. I mentioned it earlier. Henry Ford once remarked that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. And it goes on later to say, as long, I said that here already, didn't I? Yeah, sorry.
No,
it rings true, right? That's how we relate, you know? That's how we make the newcomer more comfortable so they don't have to feel the feelings I felt when I came in. That terminal uniqueness, that no one thinks like me. We can share, I get to share that with a newcomer right now and be like, listen, you're not that special. None of us are, you know? We've been there, it's okay. Because it wasn't until I realized that I could be honest. And we've been talking about honesty a lot recently, and that's really what it all goes back to. It's just remaining honest. You know, as long as I'm doing that, as long as I'm staying honest, connecting to my higher power, then, you know, I stay rooted in my recovery. I mentioned how a normal day looks like for me. I start with my prayer, and then usually by 10 o'clock, I've taken my will back a little bit, but I can check myself now. You know, I can do a spot check inventory and realize where I'm at and say, okay, backpedal. You know, a lot of those things now that might pop up on a 10-step inventory at the end of the evening, I can catch during the day or even before they happen. I have awareness now. Another gift of the program. You know, it's been only a year and a month that I've really, really been doing this thing. You know, started 8 years ago. It took me 8 years to get that 1 year coin. And yeah, I things are just things, but it's amazing what's come back in my life now. You know, obviously the relationships are the most important part, but I didn't think any of this was possible. I mean, I remember telling Andrew a couple months ago, like, I wake up every day into a life I had written off as completely unattainable. And I didn't do that. You know, I don't do that. You guys do that. You teach me how to get that. If I'm smart when I first get here, which I wasn't, you know, I look for the people who have what I want, and I grab it, not just nitpicking a little bit. Listening to the room full of drunks would have been the best thing I ever did, is the best thing I ever did. I just wasn't ready to do it at the beginning. And I guess, you know, I'm a firm believer that everybody needs every last drop. You know, some bottoms were really low physically, some were really low emotionally, some were really low mentally, but each one was deeper in its own way. And, you know, I try to help raise bottoms now. So how do I carry the message, right? Newcomer comes in, they're the first person I'm going to after the meeting. Here's my phone number. My name's Andy. Tell me about how you drank. Yeah, dude, I get it. I can relate. I understand. Keep coming back. Here's when we meet. Oh, here's the app. Download that. And I'll text them the next day. You know, I wouldn't do that before. I wouldn't wake up and think of somebody else before. That's not how my brain worked. But I do that now. And that's where the gift is. I said it already. That's where the gift of the program is carrying the message. You know, to see guys who came in 30, 60, 90 days ago getting coins and talking to people at meetings and chairing meetings and making coffee and doing all the little things that we're supposed to do, all those little things that seem innocuous, but they help keep us sober. I don't understand why this is going to help keep me sober. Just do it. Just do it. Yeah, to be able to help people now without even thinking about it. I'm going to mention this so it defeats the purpose, but like I saw a guy, I was driving down Bushkill Drive right by the creek in Easton yesterday, and I saw a dude walking his bike on the wrong side of the guardrail, and he tumbled down like towards the creek. He almost fell in the creek, and it's a pretty steep hill there. So, you know, I stop my truck, I get out, I help him take his bike out of the brush and pick the bush off the front. This dude's like 60. There's a lane and a half on the side of the road he could have been walking in, and he's walking in the brush. I don't know. But, you know, I wouldn't have stopped to help that guy. Not a year ago, definitely not 2, 5, 10, 15 years ago, I wouldn't have done that, and that's not me. That's that God moment I get to notice, that moment when my higher power's like, hey, man, you know, maybe go help that guy. I don't think of those things. But by waking up, getting connected, talking to other alcoholics, trying to carry the message wherever I can, I get to be awake to those things now. It's such a blessing. You know, and whether I make an effort to or not, you know, I surround myself with alcoholics all the time at work, outside of work. running into them on the street. You know, I ran into people on the street before. I put my head down, sunglasses up, walk the other way. I don't want to talk to anybody. Now I absolutely love it. How are you doing? How's your day? And genuinely wanting to know. The fact that I've been able to develop the want to make sure other people are okay is, again, a gift of the program. I don't do that. I never wanted that, but I got it. And it's amazing. I owe everything in my life today to the program Alcoholics Anonymous and what I learned in this room. And I didn't say it at the beginning, but, you know, when I talk about the program, the words are not mine. What I know about this program is a sum of what I've been taught through the big book of AA and everybody in these rooms. You know, it's... I keep saying it's a gift because it's a gift. Here's another thing I noticed the other day. After my prayer in the morning, you know, it usually ends, and I've caught myself, looking back now, it's probably been over the last few months, I just sit there and say thank you over and over again. Thank you. You know, a little bit of willingness, rigorous honesty, it's just paid dividends in my life. You know, if you don't have a sponsor, get one. If you haven't started the steps, start them. Because it only gets better. It really does. Every day only gets better. I'm going to start rambling now, so I just want to say thank you guys very much for letting me share my story. I appreciate it. Thank you.